while we were in this chapter, the philosophy of rebirth, in paragraph number 8, as I said, maybe it's good if you could mark your paras so we can refer easier by giving this number. Well, in para 8 we have come midway, but here the idea that is being expanded is basically that of Buddhism and the Mayavadins' concept of the soul, which he had in fact initiated in the previous paragraph. What it says here is that that which we call the soul can only be a mass or stream of phenomena of consciousness which has come into existence in the sea of real or illusory becoming. So as we have seen, the question of the soul being something eternal need not arise in the philosophy of Buddhism, because Buddhism or Mayavada would say that this flux, this eternal becoming, is supported by the Brahman, the impersonal being, or the eternal becoming. So you can see why Buddhism does not accept the soul, because they don't see much necessity of such a permanent element in this becoming. You see, when we talk about the soul and the psychic being, it becomes necessary for us, as I said yesterday, which Sri Aurobindo will explain toward the end of this chapter, it becomes necessary because you want to have something which is growing through every incarnation or birth. There must be one element within us which is constant, and that constant is called the soul. And we needed that more, as Sri Aurobindo explains, for the theory of evolution. That constant is one that will keep on taking birth after birth until, as we have seen sometime midway, some kind of an explanation I gave, where the mother says ultimately the supramental body is nothing but a psychic being. So now we understand the importance of the psychic being. The supramentalized body, that which becomes the divine body of beauty and bliss, as he calls it, is nothing but the psychic substance. So what does it mean? He can say that, the mother can say this, because it's a psychic being which over the centuries of birth becomes ultimately that body of the supramental being. So the psychic being is absolutely indispensable for our integral philosophy and yoga. But those who do not have this kind of a transformation of the body or the physical or whatever you want to call, for them this constant element is not an absolute necessity. For them it is a kind of a flux. Wave after wave, like we see on the ocean, they come and hit the beach, the shores, they withdraw. So for them our life is like that, a wave that comes off the ocean of energy. It comes to the height for a while, then it dips back. So we don't have to kind of find a meaning to why does the wave come up on the ocean. It is part of the movement of the ocean of of universal cosmic energy. So Buddhism and Shankara would, in their own way, we should say, they just say it's a flux. A wave comes and goes down. A wave comes and goes back. So our lives are just like that. A wave out of the ocean of what Sri Aurobindo calls here one eternal becoming, or a continual stream of energy. So if that is the purpose of life, just a becoming, constant becoming, then where is the necessity of this constancy of a soul? Yes, there is a constant element, surely, because even the ocean, it stands on the base, which is called the earth. That earth is not shaking all the time, it is rotating in its own wave, that's true. But there's something called the constant upon which the waves are moving. The flux is there on something permanent called the earth. And this earth, they say, yes, there is a Brahman. There is an eternal becoming, the capital. So they say we don't need an intermediary permanent element called the soul or the psychic being. We are positing that behind this intense, immense energy, there is a supreme being. And that is what is a constant. So see, basically they do also need a constant theorem. What is constant? This is the supreme. And rest is a becoming. And a rest is a becoming means what? Then for them life is a useless thing. It doesn't have much of a direction, at least not an evolutionary direction. You come here, you are into ignorance, you are into desires, you enjoy, you suffer and all that. The wave dips back into the ocean, tatastu, then it's over. But it's only when Sri Aurobindo brings in the question of each of these waves transforming themselves into a kind of a supreme body, then this wave needs something constant within itself. So you try to understand, because these are very highly philosophical things, but if you don't catch these nuances, then we have the tendency, you know, like normally we hear philosophical conferences, oh, Sri Aurobindo has said everything and makes them all the main ideas that are already existing in the Vedas and the Upanishads. But now we say it's not so. So that is where I'm trying to bring to your attention again and again, and Sri Aurobindo himself is emphasizing so much, because these are the main thoughts. And out of this, what the mother had once said, you know, Buddha and Shankara considered the world as a mistake committed by the Supreme. I mean, it has no end, it has no aim, it is kind of, you know, it's a leela, one somebody said, it's a divine play, fun and frolic and get lost. Or then it's a place of suffering where the soul, where the individual comes, unfortunately he has come. So the whole thing becomes a kind of a mistake of the divine. So how can Sri Aurobindo say it's a mistake of the divine? Wherein he's trying to find a meaning in every hour of our existence, every minute of our existence, he cannot cancel our life as a meaningless life. So you see, there's a complete shift in thinking. But today it is thinking, tomorrow it will be life. Because Buddha 2500 years back, it was a thought. But after 500 years, it became a life reality. The way Buddhism influenced the monks and people left the society and all that, it became a reality. So too Sri Aurobindo will become a reality of life down the line. It could take another 2 centuries, doesn't matter. But that is what is happening, the thought waves are moving now. Unfortunately, because it is the age of spirituality, the Sri Aurobindo's wave is getting a tremendous support from the world thinking also. There are other thinkers not knowing Sri Aurobindo who are echoing Aurobindonian thought, because they are catching this universal thinking that is there in the time spirit. So coming back to the text, So now we understand why Sri Aurobindo is emphasizing on this. So he tells clearly, for a theory of this kind, it is not indispensable that a psychic entity always the same should persist and assume body after body, form after form, until it is dissolved at last by some process annulling altogether the original impetus which created this cycle. It's quite possible that as each form is developed, a consciousness develops corresponding to the form, and as a form dissolves, the corresponding consciousness dissolves with it. The one which forms all alone endures forever. It's a very simple explanation and very plausible one. In fact, most of the people would take this and not really take to the idea that there's a psychic being and a constant evolution and all that. In fact, that is what the scientists and the materialists would believe, that just as the body comes in, there's a consciousness developing around the form body. Now, how do we understand that this consciousness developing? He says in the next line, let me read out. Or as the body is gathered out of the general elements of matter and begins its life with birth and ends with death, so the consciousness may be developed out of the general elements of mind, and equally begin with birth and end with death. So you see, it's much simpler, easier, more convincing as such that a child is born, as he grows up, he develops a consciousness. What kind of a consciousness? A mental consciousness, an aesthetic consciousness, a vital consciousness, an emotional consciousness, a physical consciousness. As he develops, as he grows, he develops. And as old age comes in, all these faculties, as they really come to their lowest ebb, then all the consciousness becomes smaller, 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 and we lose the mental consciousness, the aesthetic, the vital, the physical, and ultimately, when this melange of body, life, and body, it disintegrates, consciousness disintegrates. So the beginning is with the body, the birth of the body, and the end is with the death of the body. So they say, why should we think of all this psychic being and the soul? And the one which forms all alone endures forever. Because after all this energy, all this body, all this matter belongs to one supreme being. So there, you know, it's like the sea ocean once again. Thousands of ocean waves come up, they go back, but the sea remains the same. The quantum, the quantity of the sea is the same, even though there could be a millions of waves, but they all the waves sink back into the ocean. So our matter sinks back to earth. From dust we come, to dust we go. So that dust of the earth remains the same. So this is a very simple, straightforward belief. And so Sri Aurobindo is saying, it is possible to believe. So where is the question of the soul? You see, we have to be very strong in this criticism and analysis and understand clearly. Because otherwise, you know, you and me, we have been brought up from our birth, fortunately, first of all in India, and secondly in Sri Aurobindo contact. But a person coming from the West is not so easy for them to accept this question of soul. So this is what they say. Why soul at all? So you see, Sri Aurobindo is really arguing even for them. It's only after that he can put forward his view. Before that he has to be very impersonal, as we say, which he is always. So here too, the one who supplies the Maya, by Maya, or otherwise the force which creates the elements, is a soul reality that endures. In none of these theories of existence is rebirth an absolute necessity or an inevitable result of the theory. A very simple conclusion. So Sri Aurobindo is really scanning all the major thinking. And now he comes to the modern thinking. This is the second new argument that begins here. What are the modern views which we can understand very easily? As a matter of fact, however, we find a great difference. For the old theories affirm, the modern denies rebirth as a part of the universal process. Modern thought starts from the physical body as the basis of our existence and recognizes the reality of no other world except this material universe. What it sees here is a mental consciousness associated with the life of the body, giving in its birth no sign of previous individual existence, and leaving in its end no sign of subsequent individual existence. What was before birth is the material energy with its seed of life, or at best an energy of life force, which persists in the seed transmitted by the parents and gives, by its mysterious infusion of past developments into that trifling vehicle, a particular mental and physical stamp to the new individual mind and body thus strangely created. A pure biological theory. There's nothing much to be explained. We understand how a human body is created. Then with the union of the parents, the seed is passed on. And it is seed that really, Sri Aurobindo calls it, that really creates, and he calls it strangely created being. And he also calls it here, the mysterious infusion of past developments into that trifling vehicle. The trifling vehicle, the seed of the sperm, as we say, is a mysterious infusion. And it is really a mysterious infusion. The other day I was seeing in the National Geographic where they are describing that once sperm gets into the ovum of the woman, then it is not possible for a second sperm to go and attach itself to the ovum. Who creates this mystery? There are thousands and thousands of sperm that get in, but once one gets in, the ovum is closed. That is the mystery. Why should it close itself? But that's what happens. Then that ovum gets, starts developing and gives birth. So all these things in one, the single word says, that is strangely created. So for the modern mind, the past is only the genes or the chromosomes, as we call, and the present is the development, and the future is we pass on the seeds into the next generation and this body is dead and gone. There is nothing big about it. So he says, what remains after death is the same material energy or life force persisting in the seed transmitted to the children and active for the further development of the mental and physical life carried with it. Nothing is left of us except what we so transmit to others, or what the energy which shaped the individual by its pre-existent and its surrounding action, by birth and by environment, may take as a result of his life and works into his subsequent action. Whatever may help by chance or by physical law to build the mental and vital constituents and environment of other individuals, that alone can have any survival. This is a very straightforward description, so we don't have to much explain, because this is what we see in our normal life. That nothing is left of us except what we so transmit to others, or what the energy which shaped the individual by its first pre-existent and its surrounding action may take as a result of his life and works. So you see, the little thing that we can pass on to the next generation is our small work. Sometimes it's big, sometimes it's small, but that's what gets on to the kind of the general race of humankind. I'm bringing in this point because Sri Aurobindo would later on argue that in our theory, what we pass on is on the individual level. You see, the works that we do, they may last a century, two centuries, but then it becomes past. But that may, say for example, Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, or the Buddha, or you take any great Ashoka. So in their individual life, what they have done has impacted the general human race immensely. But here, in Sri Aurobindo, we will see that it impacts the evolution of his own soul also. Whereas in the modern theory and the materialist theory, there is no impact on the individual. The individual is there to contribute to the general. That's why perhaps in the Western world you see the importance of the society. That means each individual contributes to the society in general. And that's why they make a hue and cry of every little of a contribution. They make a big name, a big advertisement and all that. But we in India don't do it. Now that because of media we have started doing that. But in our ancient culture we never did that. History was never written about a single person, all the achievement, except when he was a king or a queen or something. But here, every man that he gives a good speech or something is all highlighted. Because they are seeing what this individual has contributed to the society. And that is important for them. Whereas we are seeing what the individual has contributed to his own evolution of consciousness. So that's why, so here it says, that we transmit to others whatever little we can. And whatever may help by chance or by physical law to build the mental and vital constituents and environment of other individuals, you see. All the time, how is my life useful to the society? You see, that is the criterion. That the individual must be useful to the society. Whereas we in the East would say, individual must be useful for his own self-evolution. So sometimes we can be a hermit, a sannyasin. We don't have to contribute to the society as such. But contributing to your own inner growth is as important, if not more important, than contributing to the society. Behind both the mental and the physical phenomena, there is perhaps a universal life of which we are individualized, evolutionary and phenomenal becomings. This universal life creates a real world and real beings, but the conscious personality in these beings is not, or at least it need not be, the sign or the shape of consciousness of an eternal, nor even of a persistent soul or superphysical person. There is nothing in this formula of existence compelling us to believe in a psychic entity that outlasts the death of the body. There is here no reason and little room for the admission of rebirth as a part of the scheme of things. You see how strongly he has argued for the materialist, the scientist, the modern mind, that there is no evidence. That's why a biologist will argue with us, where is the evidence of your soul? We don't see, we see only the genes and the genomes and the chromosomes and all that. So Sri Aurobindo says, yes, if you look at life like this, then you don't need a psychic being. You see, what we have to appreciate in Sri Aurobindo is, he is fully identifying himself with the modern view or the materialist view and seeing from their eyes, there is no need for the soul. So the word he uses is that nothing in this formula of existence compelling us to believe in a psychic entity. So no wonder if a common man, especially in the West, does not believe in the soul, we cannot say, hey, they do not understand philosophy. Because it is a genuine problem. Because if you see the physical body, there's nothing much in it that tells you that there is a psychic being. And again, this question of the philosophy of life itself. You see, the moment you bring in Sri Aurobindo's integral philosophy of evolution, you see, then it becomes indispensable to have the soul. But the moment you have the Christian or the Buddhist theory of no evolution at all, but just a single birth, that you do what you can, that's why in the West they say we have only one life, and make the best of this life. And you see, that changes the entire attitude of life. how you become competitive, you have got 60 years or 50 years, you climb up the ladder at whatever cost you want to do, you know, whatever the means you take, but climb up the ladder of success, because you have got only one life to run the race. So you see how philosophy can or does make a full change in the rhythm of our own life. Now we come to the next one, that what could be the possible changes that could come in the modern view. So Sri Aurobindo is saying, fine, this is your theory, but what if it were found with the increase of our knowledge, as certain researches and discoveries seem to presage, that the dependence of the mental being or the psychic entity in us of the body is not so complete as we at first naturally conclude it to be from the study of the data of physical existence and the physical universe alone? What if it were found that the human personality survives the death of the body and moves between other planes and this material universe? The prevalent modern idea of a temporary conscious existence would then have to broaden itself and admit a life that has a wider range than the physical universe, and admit too a personal individuality not dependent on the material body. It might have practically to re-adopt the ancient idea of a subtle form of body inhabited by a psychic entity. And that is what is happening now. What Sri Aurobindo has said long back, 100 years back, the question of what if. That what if is becoming a reality through the study of psychology. That is the importance of the development of psychology in the modern times. Because it is psychology alone which really is showing that there is something beyond the physical existence. There are deeper layers, the way the psychologists take you back into the, you know, the time of your birth, the time of your conception, and later on the growth. So you can see, and then with our great Western master Ken Wilber showing that there are different levels of consciousness beyond the mind also. So these studies have really, Sri Aurobindo puts it here, the prevalent modern idea of a temporary consciousness would then have to broaden itself. So the study of psychology has broadened this common philosophy that there is only the physical existence and nothing beyond the body. You see, it has taken over 100 years since Sri Aurobindo wrote this. But this is how I suppose human consciousness evolves. It takes time. But it's bound to go toward that next evolutionary step. That is the strength of Sri Aurobindo's argument in every chapter. That mankind is bound to go there. It may take time, it may kill itself three world wars, but not a third world war, sure, out of the two at least. It is bound to arrive. So it has taken a long time, but whatever Sri Aurobindo has said has come true. That now the expansion is there, and then the human personality has been discovered, that it survived the death of the body and moved between other planes. You know what Ken Wilber calls about the transpersonal psychology. So it brings in other planes of consciousness. What we have learned it long back. But West will not take from Sri Aurobindo and the Vedas directly. Because they would say, it's only very few who have taken directly from Upanishads and the Gita and Sri Aurobindo. But for the common man, it's good that a Westerner himself is popularizing this idea. And that Westerner has read much about Sri Aurobindo. He is maybe stamping his own coin in his own name. But nevertheless, he has caught some truth from the East. It doesn't matter. What matters to us is the thought that spreads into the world, and the world awakens to the truth. The prevalent modern idea of a temporary consciousness, etc., will have to change. And then he says, we'll have to admit to a personal individuality not dependent on the material body. That means there is something else in the human being. What we are now coming to, they are also coming to call it the psychic being or the soul. Or there are lots of the real self. I think I told you once, a couple of years back I was in Berlin and we had a meeting of all these contemporary schools of thought, in the West at least. So I was also invited because I represent a Sri Aurobindo's thought. And quite surprisingly and happily I saw most of the schools of thought recognizing a central being. They don't call it soul because the soul is a kind of an Asiatic term. They are a bit allergic to use the Asiatic term. They want to give it their own stamp, as I said. So they may call it the real self, the individual self, the central person. I said, it doesn't matter what you call it, as long as you know that there is something central person which is beyond the existence and not dependent upon the material body. It might have practically to readopt the ancient idea. Yes, we are coming to that. A psychic or soul entity carrying with it the mental consciousness, or if there be no such original soul, then the evolved and persistent mental individual would continue after death in the subtle persistent form, which must have been either created for it before this birth, or by the birth itself, or during the life. This is the Asiatic thought that Sri Aurobindo is explaining, that this soul entity, evolved and persistent mental individual, would continue after death in this subtle persistent form, which must have been either created for it before the birth, or by the birth, or during the life. In fact, he's going to conclude with this, that once this Asiatic thought comes in, means the emergence of the psychic being, the moment you accept the psychic being, you have got to also accept the possibility of other worlds. See how beautifully Sri Aurobindo is leading us and the world, I must say. That if you accept the central being, then you must accept the other worlds. And that is the whole next chapter where Sri Aurobindo calls the order of the worlds. So you see, all these are intricately interwoven. You cannot think of the soul and not accept other worlds beyond this earth. So he is telling us that once this Asiatic thought comes in of the psychic being, then obviously you have got to have the concept of other subtle worlds, or as he says, the subtle persistent form, which must have been either created for it before this birth. That means, as we said previously also, that this psychic being pre-exists the physical body, and once the physical body dies, it continues to exist, but in some subtle form. The moment it's a subtle form, obviously it leads to subtle world. And the moment it's a subtle world, is there one world or many worlds? If there are many worlds, is there a hierarchy? If there is a hierarchy, what's the difference between all this? Then what we read, all that comes in, this hierarchy of the worlds is nothing but a relation between Purusha and Prakriti. So obviously we reach the next thought of the Purusha and Prakriti. And once we think of the Purusha and Prakriti, are they two different things? No, Prakriti is of the Purusha. Energy belongs to Purusha. So it's the consciousness of the Sat. Then automatically we come last to the Satchitananda. So you see, there are tiers and tiers of thoughts which, you know, which unravel themselves as we go forward. So the first essential thing is the idea of the soul. So he says, for either a psychic entity pre-exists in other worlds in a subtle form and comes from there with it to its brief earthly sojourn, or the soul develops here in the material world itself, and with it a psychic body is developed in the course of nature and persists after death in other worlds or by reincarnation here. These would be the two possible alternatives. An evolving universal life may have developed on earth the growing personality that has now become ourselves before it entered a human body at all. The soul in us may have evolved in lower life shapes before man was created. In that case, our personality has previously inhabited animal forms, and the subtle body would be a plastic formation carried from birth to birth, but adapting itself to whatever physical shape the soul inhabits. So this is now, we are coming closer to Sri Aurobindo obviously, but there is something of the Advaitic Vedanta thought also, that the soul has developed through several life forms, life shapes, even before it came to the human body. So that we know it has taken millions of births before it came to the human body. So in that case, our personality has previously inhabited animal forms. This inner personality, the soul, has inhabited many animal forms, and the subtle body would be a plastic formation carried from birth to birth. The subtle formation, the subtle body of the psychic being itself, has been carried from birth to birth, maybe from the little insect to the trees, to the crawling creeper, to the birds, anything. But it has taken millions of lives. And I think, as I noted once also, Mother would say the first signs of a psychic being are there in the flower. That's why a flower is so close to the divine, if I can say the word. Because before the human birth, it is in the flowers that the psychic for the first time, you know, reflects its true nature. That's why the flowers, as the mother would say, are so very receptive, and you see the name that the mother has given to each of these flowers. And, you know, magnificent flowers right from the supramental consciousness, or material, the mental, the vital, everywhere. Because as a psychic being, they receive the divine energy, and that's how the mother would give us flowers, because they would transmit the divine energy to the individual human being, because of the psychic. The mother never gave us small objects of plants or animals or anything, because they could never transmit. So that's why we could say that of all these births, now it has come to the human shape, and then what happens? Or the evolving life may be able to build a personality capable of survival, but only in the human form when that is created. This would happen by the force of a sudden growth of mental consciousness, and at the same time a sheath of subtle mind substance might develop and help to individualize this mental consciousness, and would then function as an inner body, just as the gross physical form by its organization at once individualizes and houses the animal mind and life. So here, we come to a little interregnum, and a kind of a intermediate stage. Sri Aurobindo is giving a very important idea here, that the evolving life may be able to build a personality capable of survival, and this would happen by the force of a sudden growth of mental consciousness. And at the same time, a sheath of subtle mind substance might develop and help to individualize this mental consciousness. So when we are getting this kind of a soul birth in the human body, the real envelope of the psychic being is a mental consciousness. So that is, if I can understand it rightly, the soul kind of comes to its own because now it is embedded in a mental consciousness. Prior to that, it was embedded in the vital, in the life and in the physical animal consciousness. So there it could not express itself. So you see, it's the mind which kind of, what's the quality of the mind? One of its qualities, apart from the negative one, that it is a divider, etc., etc. One of the most important qualities of mind, it is, it can reflect upon itself. That is the major quality of the mind. That it can reflect upon itself, and that is the quality of the soul. That now for the first time the soul can recognize that I am the divine. This is reflecting upon oneself through the medium of the mind, helps the soul to recognize that I am a divine portion. Up until then the soul was there in the animal, but it did not have this kind of a self-reflective capacity. So it's been given now the instrumentation of the mental consciousness. So now we see the importance of the mental consciousness in evolution. In spite of all the problems of the mind, its positive contribution towards evolution is that it has given to the psychic being the self-realization that I am the divine. So it is through the passage of the mental consciousness that the psychic comes to its own. So that is the importance. So it says, a sheet of subtle mind substance might develop and help to individualize this mental consciousness and would then function as an inner body. You see, that's the new word is giving us. That this mental consciousness creates the inner body means the subliminal. And the subliminal, we know the whole layers of the subliminal. And therefore you would say that on the former supposition we must admit that the animal too survived the dissolution of the physical body and has some kind of soul formation which after death occupies other animal forms on earth and finally a human body. For there is little likelihood that the animal soul passes beyond earth and enters other planes of life than the physical and constantly returns here until it is ready for the human incarnation. The animal's conscious individualization does not seem sufficient to bear such a transfer or to adapt itself to an otherworldly existence. This is of immense importance because we have again come across this thought in the synthesis, if you remember. And now this also adds to what we are saying in the synthesis. He says, now in the animal too there is a soul. But now the animal soul does not go into that world of the psychic being. It does not go into the subtle mental, subtle vital, subtle physical, all that. Because the animal consciousness, the soul is so very crude in its development that it cannot ascend. What it does is transmigrate. From one animal it gets into the other animal. It is within this ambit of the earth. So it's within the ambit, so it keeps on moving amongst other animals, other creatures, other, you know, forms of the animal body, until it gets ready to leap into the human body. Now we had the same idea regarding the human consciousness. That the animal might have come into the human body, the soul might have come into the human body. But even here, if we as human beings get stuck in the material, in the desire, in the life plane, our soul too also cannot ascend. Like the animal soul, the human soul also is forced to return back to earth, immediately transmigrate, or at the most go to the nearest level beyond the physical, what the mother would call as the domain of death. And this domain of death is the immediate level. The moment it leaves the body, the closest to the body is called the domain of death. And the soul goes there. And from there perhaps it returns. For all this consciousness of the animal, those are attached to the body, the mind, the life upon earth. So what Sri Aurobindo is telling us, he has already told a similar thing for the human consciousness also. Therefore, as we said in that book, that if we have to ascend to the psychic level, our consciousness here must be highly developed. So that's what we see echoing of the same thing here. On the second supposition, the power does to survive the death of the physical body in other states of existence would only arrive at the human stage of the evolution. If indeed the soul is not such a constructed personality evolved by life, but a persistent, unevolving reality with the terrestrial life and body as its necessary field, the theory of rebirth in the sense of Pythagorean transmigration would have to be admitted. But if it is a persistent, evolving entity capable of passing beyond the terrestrial stage, then the Indian idea of a passage to other worlds and a return to terrestrial birth would become possible and highly probable. But it would not be inevitable. You see, the same thing that we are talking about, that according to the Indian theory that soul can go up. It gets the possibilities, so he calls it highly possible and probable. But it is not inevitable because of what we said just now, it depends on your consciousness in life. For it might be supposed that the human personality, once capable of attaining to other planes, need not return from them. It would naturally, in the absence of some greater compelling reason, pursue its existence upon the higher plane to which it had arisen. It would have finished with the terrestrial self-evolution only if faced with actual evidence of a return to earth, would a larger supposition be compulsory and the admission of a repeated birth in human forms become inevitable. Now here the reasons given by Sri Aurobindo is not the one that I was quoting from the synthesis. Here he says, once what is not inevitable is that once the human soul starts ascending to higher levels, then he says, it may not come back. The question is, why should it come back? Because it starts enjoying these higher levels of consciousness, closer to the divine, closer to its beautiful Anandaloka, and it may refuse to come back. So he says, even here, that is what the Advaita Vedanta does. That once it gets the moksha, it doesn't want to come back. Once it sees the Brahman, it says, Tompi, I've had enough with this earth. I'm in this world of the Brahman. So even Advaita Vedanta will not compel the soul to come back. Because that is what they call the moksha. That I don't want to come back into desire and ignorance of the world. So I'm liberated. But here, in our philosophy, even these liberated souls, they do come back. Because they have a purpose, not only for their own self-liberation, but for the liberation of matter. That only Sri Aurobindo can add. So that's why he's saying that in other philosophies, it is not necessary. We have seen in Buddha, in Shankara, in modern theories, and even if Advaita wants to come in, it is fine. We get moksha. But what is there to compel that soul to come back? Unless there is a larger supposition, be there that the admission of a repeated birth in form becomes inevitable. That is the larger supposition is what? Of the evolution. Of the evolution of consciousness. Of the transformation of the physical. That is the larger supposition. So we see what a grandiose philosophy Sri Aurobindo that he has brought a meaning not only to you and to me, but the whole earth existence, the existence of the earth consciousness itself. So that is what Sri Aurobindo has contributed, not just to India, to individuals, but to the earth and to humanity. Well, it's a good point. We'll stop there.